Warning, things are about to get intense. Like when you stare into the eyes of someone that you really like for a full minute straight without blinking. Intense! Intense heat! Lasting plump! From the hot new Lifter Plump from Maybelline, New York. Formulated with chili pepper! Lifter Plump delivers a heated sensation for an instant lip plumping effect that lasts. Available in 8 sizzling shades. Honestly, my favorite is hot honey and cocoa zing. I put it on my lips and honestly, it did sizzle them. It sizzled them right to the moon. They were plump and juicy and everyone was like, Nicole, can I? And I'm like, get in line. Can you take the heat? Find your shade at Maybelline.com or a retailer near you. Amazon shoppers get 10% off Lifter Plump purchase with code 10PLUMP for a limited time.
If someone were afraid of the dentist, maybe they haven't been in a long time, maybe they're embarrassed because they haven't been in a while, I feel like this would be a really safe place for them to go and get the care that they need.
At Advanced Dentistry, we get it. If you've been avoiding the dentist because of fear, worry, or just not wanting to be judged, if you want to learn how IV sedation can change your life, visit nofeardentist.com.
You Date Me, a podcast where me, Nicole Byer, tries to figure out how I'm still single, even though if you threw a glass bottle at my head, I would still say, yum, 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 I'm in love. My guest, you've seen her on Shrill, BoJack Horseman, I Think You Should Leave, High Maintenance, Search Party, Broad City, it is a Patty Harrison!
Hi!
Patty, how are you?
I'm okay. I'm fine. Yeah. I'm feeling today is nice. I haven't had coffee in a while and so I'm trying that again. I quit it and then I started it and then I restarted it and then I quit it again. It's not as bad as the last time I quit drinking coffee, I guess. The withdrawal sores.
Why did you quit drinking coffee? Did you feel as if you were addicted?
Yeah, I think so. It just like, it made, I just always had like long-term, I guess, diarrhea.
Okay.
And I have IBS and I'm lactose intolerant. So there's a lot of like different things that can like give me diarrhea. And I've just perpetually had diarrhea and accepted it as like the way that I shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, oh yeah, I drink maybe like 4 or 5 cups of coffee a day. I'm always tired. I never feel like energized by it. I feel really jittery and like strung out. So I was like, maybe if I just quit coffee to see what would happen, that would be. And then like I did feel like better. And also when I would randomly have like a cup of coffee like after not drinking coffee for like 2 months, it did the thing that I wanted coffee to do, which is like pep me up, because it didn't do that anymore. So thank you for having me on your podcast.
And this is really fun. People really want to hear about the coffee. But I have a question. Do you have ADD maybe?
I do.
I have ADD and coffee doesn't really do anything for me. At this point, I think I just drink it because of routine.
Yeah.
It doesn't keep me awake.
It really, my favorite thing to do is to like pound a coffee at 1 p.m. and immediately go to sleep for 3 hours and wake up and just the room is spinning and I feel like shit. And then I go back to sleep and then I wake up at like 9 p.m. and then I'm up until 6 a.m. And then that's,
yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like exactly what happened to me yesterday. Yesterday, I drank some coffee at like 1:30, and then, well, I didn't take a nap immediately. I took a nap at like 8, and then full disclosure, I was masturbating at 8, and then I fell asleep with my magic wand, right? It wasn't on. It was just off, just on my fucking clit, and then I woke up an hour later and was like, oh boy, you can't even stay awake to fucking come. You know, this year's been interesting.
Well, is it kind of like one of those things where you set it up for like when you wake up, it's like you just turn it on, you go to sleep, and then when you wake up, you have come, and you're like, oh great, I got it over with.
I wish I was that, I had that fortitude, but no, I just truly passed out and then woke up. I was like, oh no. Well, I guess it's not what I wanted to do at that moment, so I left it alone.
It is cool that masturbating has kind of blurred into all of the other shit that I hate to do in lockdown. That just is something that I continue to violently do way too much all the time.
Violently is a very, very good word to describe what I'm doing alone at home. Patty, I have a question. So I asked you to do the podcast, and you said, hell yeah, does it matter that I've been married for 20 years to the person I lost my virginity to and I've never dated anyone else? And I said, it doesn't, even if this is a bit. And then you said, I'll let my husband know. And I still don't know if this is a bit or not.
It's a bit.
Oh, okay.
100%. Okay. I've never been married, unfortunately. And I mean, I would love if that were my truth. I wish it weren't a joke. I wish the person I lost my virginity to was my husband and that I had to ask him permission to be on podcasts. But sadly,
nope. I couldn't even imagine that life. Honey, can I do this? it blows my mind that some people live that way.
Yeah. And even just being like, hey, you know, I don't even care if you do it. It's just nice if you check in and let me know. It's like that level of like,
yeah,
is like more insidious to me.
Do you watch any of the 90 Day Fiancé franchises?
I don't. That is the one where it's, immigrants trying to get citizenship?
Yeah, it's almost anti-immigration propaganda, if you will. But if you push that aside, what a fun treat to watch.
I have watched like a couple of episodes, and it was so insane. I'm not a big reality TV person. There are specific shows that I've watched. I watched Love is Blind. And I watched Love on the Spectrum, but I know like everyone around me is obsessed with 90 Day Fiancé, and I think it would be a very like vortex like experience for me that if I started.
It fully is. It is very insidious. You watch one episode, you're like, these people are literally out of their minds. This is wild. I have to watch another. And then you get sucked into the spinoffs. I watch all the spinoffs. And there was an episode where one of the people was married. She's from the Philippines. He's from here. She was having a girls' night with her sister-in-law. And then her husband went to the club to pick her up to be like, I think you've had too much fun and it's time for you to go home because you need to be a classy woman. And I was like, wait, why aren't more people upset? There's one person screaming, but I was like, everyone should be screaming. This is nuts.
Yeah, that is like middle school, seventh grade chaperone level, like, control. Like, you're like a marionette basically at that point, that you're a puppet that like fucks your ventriloquist
at that
or whatever.
Point, you're like a sex doll, because he also was like, don't curl your hair, don't wear tight clothes. It was just a lot of rules that I was like, the world has so many rules, why would you want the person you're with to put more rules on you?
Yeah, I'm like, that is something that is a reason why I kind of like didn't jump into that show, as I imagine it's a lot of like, I know that there are like American women that are dating immigrant men, but the men, like American men who like have this idea of like having their mail order concubine sort of thing is disturbing to me. And that I'm like, yeah, I anticipated that I was going to watch like a man be like, okay, it's 7 p.m. time to get into your silky little monogram nightie and you clean the floor while I whack off. I'm sure that doesn't happen in the show, but
well, they haven't shown that, and I say yet, because the show is truly wild and anything can happen.
Well, you know, let's go into a pitch meeting. Like, things we've yet to see that we could actually imagine happening on the show that we think viewers would really, you know, think viewers would say it would pay off to see that mm-hmm. happen.
They'd be like, I didn't like it at first, but then I was sucked in and I love watching what happens at 7 p.m.
What is it about the show that you love so much?
I guess I really love watching... I think I like watching unreasonable people. It's kind of like improv. You have your wackadoo character, and then you have your straight man. So the couples are the wackadoo characters, and then every part of their family are the straight men being like, why are you doing this? They just ask the questions that the viewer wants to know, and nobody ever has answers, and it's a full-blown disaster.
So it's kind of stabilizing for you.
Yeah, and I guess it's like, I have such little control in my life right now, I'll watch these people be full-blown out of control. And I go, you know, that was entertaining. And I know it's not, like, real. That's the thing with, like, reality. It's like, not everything is super real. But also, the more we find out about what happens, like, after the camera stop rolling, it gets darker and darker. And I just try to push that aside.
I don't even know if you can push it aside. I think you just gotta dive in.
Yeah, I try not to look at what they do outside the show because it's so fucked up sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, so I was turned on to Bad Girls Club.
Ah, yes.
And I'd never watched it. I knew it existed. And then Z-Way was like, you should watch this show. It's got like stuff in it that you may like. And I was like, I doubt that. This seems like it's like a traumatized people who are hyper manipulated into these situations, that it's like, I don't know. I feel like, because I know about like The Bachelor and how those girls were, you know, the producers like manipulated and like mm-hmm. really basically agitated them and facilitated this environment of like complete disorientation or whatever, so that they're all like, they have access to alcohol 24/7. They're like all really hungry. They can't like see what's happening in the outside world. So it just like makes them manic. And like, I imagine that like, at least in the show, like The Bachelor, there's like a better chance that not everyone has like debilitating childhood trauma. And it's like mm-hmm. Bad Girls Club is like, since that's like the prereq or something.
Yeah, it's almost as if during casting, the first question is, are you a little unhinged with childhood trauma? And if you say yes, you're put into the pile of yeses. And if you go, oh no, I go to therapy and I'm pretty well adjusted, they're like, this is not the show for you.
Yeah, they're like, but would you ever fuck your therapist? Like, what do you think about your therapist? Don't you think she could be a kind of a like a twatty cunty liar too? But the thing that sucks is that I had to buy it on like on Amazon Prime on my TV and to watch it, because I couldn't like I was like too lazy, I guess, to find a place to stream it for free. So mm-hmm. I bought the whole all of season 4. Ooh. and I watched a couple of episodes of it and I was like, this is really depressing, but now I feel obligated to finish it because I paid for the whole season.
Yeah, you spent the money, so you might as well just get into it.
That's true. Thank you, Nicole.
You're welcome. I'm here to shepherd you into trash television.
Yeah, I'm gonna be new. I'm gonna be new the next time you talk to me.
You're gonna be like, I've seen the whole thing. I'm not a better person for it, but I was entertained for hours.
The next time you see me, I'm wearing like a baby doll tee that goes like really long, and then like, but I'm wearing low rise like distressed I'm wearing a low-rise distressed denim skirt, but it's super low-rise so you can see my hip bones. But it's like that like weird strip right above your genitals but below your belly button that's showing. Mm-hmm. And then I have like that like weird kind of like scene emo tease where it's like a side part and the back's like all like teased up. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely. I had my hair like that. It was like the Posh Spice angular cut where it's longer in the front.
Yeah.
Shavy, short in the back, and you spike it up.
Were you emo or scene or?
I don't think I could call myself fully scene or fully emo. I like pop emo. Like, I was supposed to see My Chemical Romance this year, but, you know, Corona took that away from me.
Yeah. There was like a lot of weird kind of like all indie pop rock revival.
Resurgence,
like,
yes.
There's this bit like Armor for Sleep. Did you ever listen to Armor for Sleep?
No, I don't know Armor for Sleep.
There are a bunch of bands on this. I think they were on Equal Vision Records. I don't know. There were a bunch of bands on this label that I really liked, and it's just like emo pop, poppy indie rock that's like super catchy. And they were doing a reunion tour this year. And
were you gonna go?
It's one of the worst things around.
A lot of my in-person crowd plans, and by a lot, all of them are gone. And I know everyone else's is too, but I do keep saying to my therapist, I've been affected. And she's like, yes, Nicole, this is the space for you to say that. Just don't go out into the world screaming, I'm affected by this.
you look at your like therapist sleeve, and right inside their jacket, you see like a neon wristband because they just like secretly returned from like Electric Forest Music Festival. And they're like, oh, yeah.
She, like, went and saw Smash Mouth. I believe Smash Mouth had a concert during Corona because they're all stars.
That checks out. My friend saw Smash Mouth, like, a couple of years ago, and she said they opened and closed with Rockstar or All Star.
That truly sounds like a delight and a treat, and I would leave in the middle because I don't know any of their other songs.
Yeah, you come from the beginning. Knowing that, you show up, and then you leave, you go to a bar, you get, like, a couple of, like, mudslides, and then...
Ooh, a mudslide!
I assume if you're gonna go see, if you're seeing Smash Mouth, you're probably, like, a huge fan of mudslides.
You're or like, I like ice cream with my alcohol.
Immersive experience.
Yes, that is a very immersive experience to have Bailey's ice cream, chocolate syrup, and then maybe a liquor. I don't remember.
I think it's like rum, right? All those drinks are like rum and like Moose Tracks ice cream.
Moose Tracks ice cream. Patty, are you single right now?
I am.
Are you on the apps?
I am. I have been for forever.
Which ones are you on?
I'm on Tinder, and I'm on Hinge and Raya and this app called Field. And then I have Bumble, but I don't really use it. And then I was on Grindr for like a month, and it was a nightmare. And then
why was Grindr a nightmare? Because I oftentimes would be like, I wish there was a Grindr for me where it tells me by the foot where somebody is.
That's like the one amazing feature of Grindr. I remember I downloaded it one time. I had just like broken up with my ex-boyfriend at the time and was on a work trip in like Atlanta and was staying at a hotel. And so I downloaded Grindr because I'd never downloaded it. And I was very hesitant to use it because like I knew of other trans women who like used it and they were like, it's a pretty hellish experience for trans women. But like the other dating apps don't really do a good job of like letting you find men who are like trans amorous or like attracted to trans women. On other apps, it's like it's gotten a little better on like Tinder and stuff, but like Grindr's like one of the few apps that lets men specifically find trans women if they're interested in it, versus like if I'm on Tinder or like Bumble and has been kind of a nightmare. Hinge has been kind of a nightmare in that, like, on Tinder, I can put that I'm transgender, like, right on top of my profile. So it's like, there are guys that, you know, swipe for your pictures and then they don't read that I'm trans or whatever. And then I'll get like a message that's like, not into trannies, or like, oh, like not into. So it's like that risk is there, and it like is, mm-hmm. it just is shitty. But like, but on apps like Bumble, your information is like down.
Yeah. It's like page. You have to swipe through pictures and the little prompts or whatever. And then it's, yeah. it's pretty far down.
So it's like the odds of guys reading that I'm trans is like way less. And also I have to be the first person to message. So it's like
mm-hmm.
on Tinder, at least it's like, I think usually guys will message first. So it's like if a guy doesn't message me after they've matched with me, there's probably a good chance they were just swiping and they didn't read that I was trans. And then they read after the fact and they're like, okay, I'm not going to engage with it, which is like, great. Like, I don't have to like deal with that. But like, yeah. Bumble, it's like I have to message those guys because I don't mm-hmm. know if they read or not. And so it creates like more of a situation where I'm like, hey, what's up? Hi, how are you doing? How's your day? And it's like, I don't date trannies. And it's like, okay. Thank you so much. Can I actually like just take you out to coffee as friends and pick mm-hmm. your brain about your amazing personality? But yeah, so Grindr, supposedly they were like, my trans female friends were like, it's because it's mostly gay men, and then there are men that are like looking to meet trans women. But Grindr, the atmosphere of Grindr is so hypersexual that like a lot of the guys on Grindr who are looking to meet trans women are like discreet or like DL, or they're like.
Mm-hmm.
They're not out. They're like trying to look to hook up with trans women in secret. And a lot mm-hmm. of those guys are scary. They're like,
yeah.
Usually it's because they haven't like dealt with their sexuality, or like, you know, they're like just in the closet completely and so scared of people finding out that like those are the guys that like beat up and like kill trans women out of like panic. Mm-hmm. So it's like, in that situation, there's also just like a lot of men in like a hypersexual app like Grindr who like their only frame of reference for trans women is like porn. So they like immediately like blast you with like pictures of their like gaping assholes.
Oh boy.
Or like just like their like really like blood red pruny dicks. And it's like, and there's no filter. It's like, I can't really put that I don't want messages.
You can't say, yeah, you can't pick and choose.
Yeah, I can't be like, I don't want a message from like a 64-year-old man mm-hmm. who's being like, I beckon your she-cock. Come to me, gorgeous tranny. So, but also, don't tell my wife and kids. It's like very, it's a degrading, mm-hmm. like pretty, it's a gauntlet. It feels really bad.
Truly hellish. And real quick, can I ask a question? Mm-hmm. I've had some sensitive trans conversations where I've had guests say things and I haven't corrected them. You've said tranny a couple of times. That's bad. Yes.
Tranny is a bad word to say for, I guess, people who like aren't trans.
Okay, so it's like the N-word for me, where I can say it, and maybe, well, I wouldn't want other friends to say it.
So it's like, it's,
sorry if you have, if this is the stupidest question.
No, not at all. It's about, I think, like, I would never say the T-word is like bad as the N-word or something like that. I mm-hmm. think it's like, it depends on how you're talking about it. Like, I've been around gay friends who will be talking and they'll be like, oh, there were like a bunch of trannies over there, like mm-hmm. in front of me. And I'm like, don't say that. Like, because it is a derogatory word, and it's a word used to kind of like historically, especially in TV and like film and shit. It's like a joke. It's like a joke word meant to just like degrade and belittle this person.
Yeah.
And there's like, you know, it's, When I use it, I'm talking about like the way these men speak to me, and it's like tranny porn. It's like shemale porn. Like mm-hmm. I would never use the word shemale to sincerely gender somebody,
but to describe the type of porn that people watch. Not to transplain, but I watched Disclosure, and it's mind-boggling how trans people are presented in our media, even now, it's fucking insane.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I think with anything, any public conversation, there's like, I guess we're at the advent of the conversation breaking into the mainstream. There's like the pendulum swing of, it's like there's overcorrection. So it's like before the representation was so bad, it was just like every like transnies are like chicks with dicks and like purely a punchline. And then there's this push to like, I think with any like social movement, there's like a push in the media to capitalize on it. Like, mm-hmm. So it's like now it's like, I feel like there's so much people wanting to make programming that's like overly sympathetic, where it's like they only want to make shows about like trauma, like the trans trauma, and like that's your narrative, is that it's all trauma all the time. And I think that's also not healthy. Like, I think those stories are real, is mm-hmm. like there are real stories about like that are important to be told about like the lived experiences of trans people and the violence and the struggle that is dealt with because of society and like social mores and stuff like that. But I think when you're only given that narrative and like they will only tell those stories, they'll only green light those stories, but they won't green light like other stories that don't have to do with like their perception of what your identity is, I think it's like very psychologically harmful to the demographic of people who are actually like a part, yes. like trans, actual trans people. Like if you're a trans person and you're in like a small town or something, and your only frame of reference for what your identity is like TV or like whatever, and you're only seeing either trans people being like used as a joke or that like you're just getting brutalized and beat and raped all the time and murdered, it's like, oh, my life trajectory is going to be a dark one. I think mm-hmm. it's psychologically very harmful.
Yeah, it's very curious. It's a lot like I don't want to say like the Black experience. There's similarities where like I had said to a friend, I think this was around the time 12 Years a Slave had come out. And I had said, I was like, I don't think I want to watch this. I don't think I need to watch another slave movie. I wish more joyful things were created for Black people. And my friend, without irony, truly looked at me and said, well, if they don't keep making them, we'll forget about them. And I was like, I don't think I'll forget about it in the same way I don't think trans people will forget that they're brutalized so much.
Yeah.
I would love to see, which is why like I appreciate the parts you play. Like in A Simple Favor, there's no mention. It's your person who exists in that world. And I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. It was one, like truly the one of, subtextually the most important character in that movie I play, like kind of the most pivotal character, even though I am on screen for one full second. I will say that my character kind of drives the story and is kind of the backstory
too. It does drive the story. Yeah. You are the backbone of that movie. But I just thought it was funny that like you got to pop in, be funny and leave. And it wasn't belabored. It wasn't talked about.
It's like, it's the main goal, I think, of my career. And yeah, I mean, that idea of like, it's like, I don't need to watch this. Like, this isn't for me, even though it's mm-hmm. like about like what their perception of what I am is, this like these movies and these TV shows are making. I was like, this isn't for me. Like, I get it. And I mm-hmm. don't need to like re-experience it. And it's like, representation, I think that is like one of the pitfalls of like the clunky overcorrection of like people scrambling to try and like, okay, well, like we need to be more diverse. And it's mm-hmm. like if the person who's like doing the green lighting at some like development, like studio, or someone who's in development at like a studio is like a well-to-do or well-meaning like older white guy who's like, I see like trans women, I've seen them before as like, you know, as sex workers. And that's kind of it. And then it's like, so I'll green light a whole series just like only about that. And it's like, not all representation is great representation. Mm-hmm. And like, there are 100% trans women who are sex workers. That's like a real experience. Yes. And that has a lot to do with the way our society like boxes out and marginalizes trans people. And like, does it like a lot of people don't have access, or it's like still legal for them to get fired for being, or not hired to, for being trans. So it's like, those stories are valid, but it's like getting to make other stories that are not defined by like other people's one-dimensional perceptions of who they think you are versus like what you actually want to do with your life and what your aspirations are outside of that. It's like, that's the, that would be the dream, is to make something that's like not anything at all to do with it. And it's like, it's not even that it's like I want to play like cis characters or anything like that. It's like, I would love to just not have it be shoehorned. And so I've gotten the opportunity mm-hmm. to do that a couple times, and that's been like the most rewarding thing, because it didn't, it honestly, there was a point when it didn't feel like that would ever happen.
Yeah, it's very interesting that white privilege and like systemic racism truly trickles down via everything in our society. I mean, I think I've said this on the podcast 100 times, but when I started writing scripts and like auditioning for stuff and casting stuff, I didn't know that if you didn't say not white, the default is to just see white people, because that is the default. That is the norm. And if you don't notate that in a script, the casting will not go out of their way. And I don't want to say all casting, but that's like kind of the norm. They don't go out of their way to look for people of color or other marginalized people. And that's just, it's so fucking wild to me.
And that is such a, like, kind of more insidious thing. I feel like I keep throwing around the word insidious, but it is like,
it's a good word. Also a good horror series. I've seen them all.
It seems like, and I know this is an aside, but I feel like it seems like that's a series that I would watch. And while I'm watching it, I'm like, this is so fucking corny and stupid. Ha ha. Look at their dumb asses. And then when I go to sleep that later that night, I'm like, it's in the room, and I deserve to die for being a bitch when I watched it.
That's exactly what happened when I watched them.
Okay, wait. I was going to ask which one is your, if I, should I start watching them?
I personally really liked them. I thought they were spooky ooky, and I liked them. I could not tell you what happens in any of them because I watched them in succession.
Succession?
Succession?
Yeah.
Back to back.
That checks out. I did that with I did that with Fast and Furious.
They're my favorite movies. I fucking love them.
They're amazing.
They're really great movies.
I couldn't imagine having to direct like a car race scene.
I have no idea.
Sequence.
I have no. I would love to see the scripts, because I'm like, does this script say car flies into the sky, Vin Diesel hangs on to a, or no, The Rock hangs on to a helicopter, car explodes. Like, how does that written in the script?
Well, I feel like anytime I've tried to write something in a script like that is like a, some sort of like dialogue-less action sequence, or there's just like a lot of action. Mm-hmm. The notes I always get back are like, this is too, there's too much description happening here. You need to, and I'm like, but the movie, this is literally like there's no dialogue. It's like The Rock literally like on a tank that's like flying off a bridge, and like Michelle Rodriguez is just like hanging on to like a car or something. And it's like, how was that? Was it just like she on car, he fly, explode, he fall, boom,
big boom, boom, boom.
And then they're just like, yeah, we'll figure it out in the storyboarding, I guess, or something.
Honestly, maybe, because that's a note I've gotten a lot where I'm like, but nothing happened. Okay, all right, there's just no dialogue here.
It's been a real like 180 experience, like understanding, or I guess coming to appreciate movies like that, where I'm just like, those movies are so, watching them the first time around, being like, these are really dumb, and then being like, oh, these were probably so crazy to act and difficult to actually make. It's kind of insane that they were able to like get this shot of like a car driving under a semi, like bed, a moving semi truck, like on the highway.
I took Sashir, my friend, to see the 8th one, and she did. Oh no, I took her to see Hobbs and Shaw, and she didn't want to see it. And then during the movie, was like going like, oh, ah, because she talks a lot during movies. And then after we left, she was like, that was fun as hell. I was like, yeah, these movies are so much fun.
It's like why I mean, you can watch, like, I don't know. I'm not going to those movies to feel like connected to anything. I'm not trying to feel like human watching those movies. I want to like see someone like oiled up in like a tank top
being like it's his time. He knows what he did.
It's like, that's what I did you see how long it took me to like come up with that line? That's why I get noted so hard on my scripts.
It took a while, and I appreciate it that it was just so simple.
My scripts get noted like crazy, and literally the description is like, he is going in the car, and I think the car's red. I haven't figured it out yet. No, well, let's just figure it out in post if the car, what color the car is. I'm an appreciator now. I think more, especially like in lockdown, watching a million movies and being like, oh, mm-hmm. I guess that was probably like a crazy like setup for them to get that shot or whatever.
I like to think about crazy setups. And then when someone exits the scene, I'm like, they're probably standing behind a bookshelf right now or crouched down real low to stay out of the shot.
Yeah. They're like waiting.
And that makes me laugh so hard. Real quick, we have to take a break.
Did you know that it's Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month? Macy's is highlighting some really cool AAIP-owned brands right now, like Cardin, Kaja, Emilia George, and Hey Meave. Plus, you can help support college access and student success when you donate online or round up in store to APIA Scholars. APIA is the nation's leading nonprofit organization devoted to the academic, personal, and professional success of Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander students. Shop Asian American and Pacific Islander owned brands at Macy's.com or in store. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know, there's always something that I really need to talk about, and thank God I have a podcast, but then there's stuff that I don't want to reveal publicly. So I talk to a therapist, and listen, we all carry around different stressors, big and small, and when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get stuff off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire, get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional cost. And I gotta say, that's very important because the first person you meet might not be good for you. So even though it's work, you gotta work to find someone who like is helpful and is good for you. So don't stick with someone just because you feel like you have to. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/date me today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/date me. Okay. Hey, did you know 1 in 5 Americans have learn a new language on their bucket list? If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste time on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned out in the real world. Babbel made it super easy for me to brush up on my Spanish before my vacation to Mexico. See how I said that? It's better, and it sounds like I speak Spanish. It just makes traveling better, so you can like order food, ask for directions, and flirt with the locals. Me encanta, muchacho. without having to consult language apps while on vacation. Here's a special limited time deal for my listeners. Right now, get 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for my listeners at babbel.com/date me. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/date me, spelled BABBEL.com/date me. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at Breezeline.com.
Back. What were we talking about before we started talking about the Fast and the Furious movies?
That casting people assume that people are white if they're it's not noted in the script. I mean, that's been like such. Well, we were saying that it was Insidious, and then it went into
That's where
it
went.
I think it is really like the most egregious part. Or, like, I guess genre for me with that is, like, fantasy and, like, sci-fi. Because it's, like...
Yes.
There's so many, like, sci-fi, like, series and the fantasy series where everyone is white in a way that I'm, like, this is the one genre where literally everything is made up. And, like, it's, like, in like, Star Wars... Like, one of the Star Wars movies, it's like Donnie Yen is in it, and he's literally, they're all aliens. They're all like out in outer space. Yes. And his character is like Donnie Yen. He's Asian, so he's a kung fu monk in space. I'm like, he could literally be like anything. And it's like, he's Asian, so he's gonna do kung fu. And I'm like, it's just like, I think too, like, there's so much sci-fi movies about like aliens and stuff where it'll be like a shot of like a desert on an alien planet and they're playing like throat singing or like Arab music, like that's alien. And I'm like, that's like,
yeah, it's fucking wild. I've been watching Lord of the Rings. There are zero black people in any of them.
I just watched the first one. There's literally in that franchise there are like 70 speaking roles and they're all like white English actors.
It's so wild to me. I had that issue doing sketch comedy. Like, I was at a pretty white institution and people weren't writing for me on my sketch team. And I was like, why? We're playing dragons and made up shit. Like, no, this isn't real life. But also in real life, there's black people doing things. There's tons of people doing shit. And I like asked to get moved teams and was moved to a team where like I ran into the same thing. It was just, it was very disheartening that even in like silly comedy sketches, I had one line and I was never the lead of it.
Yeah. It's people's imaginations are conditioned so like in a way that they're just like, oh, I guess not. It's like literally like going through exercises in writers' rooms where we're like, okay, so like imagine a woman lawyer, and it's like, how do you cast her? And it's like, I would think like Naomi Watts or like Rachel Weisz, or like it's like just people rattling. It's just like such a it feels like it would be like an easy fix to just be like, okay, it's this lady, she's kind of like part lizard and she's from she lives in the sun, and but she it, we're thinking
so she lives in the sun, so her skin is alabaster white.
Florence Pugh kind of lived lizard that lives in the sun. I think Florence Pugh, I think maybe like even Kai Gerber, give her a shot at acting, which is cool.
Ooh, this is a person I don't know. Kai Gerber
is Cindy Crawford's model daughter.
Oh, how interesting.
It's
what's her name?
Kaya Gerber.
What is she, heiress to the Gerber fortune?
I don't know, but I'm just going to say yes.
Okay. I like to know that.
I'm going
to
say it would be a miracle if she wasn't.
I have a question. So in auditions, rather earlier in my career, actually, it's happened a couple times as of recent, but I've had casting directors be like, be blacker, be sassier. Is there code words when people are like, can you act more trans?
I saw a sketch, I think, that was like you auditioning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, like a while ago. That was really great. Mm-hmm. I mean, not necessarily in auditions. So I think the one thing I'll pride myself on, and it's a weird, like, nuanced thing, because there are so few roles for written where, like, trans actors are seen. If you're not, like, cis passing, like, mm-hmm. if you don't just, like, look like you could play a cis woman, then the options for you are dwindled down so much that it's like, oh, you can only, you know, really audition for certain parts. But even in parts written for trans women, they want, like, model-esque. So it's like the industry is deeply flawed, of course.
Yes.
But, like, it's usually, like, in the script. When I brought up, like, the thing that I pride myself on, I guess, or the one thing I'm, like, proud of about, like, sticking to my guns, is that I've gotten a lot of, like, bad scripts for trans characters that I've said mm-hmm. no to, because they're, like, there's a part where it's, like, she's at the airport and the TSA is giving her a hard time and she's, like, can I please get my ID back? And they're, like, oh, you're a dude, and she lowers her voice and she says,
oh, no.
I said, give me my ID back.
Oh,
and it's
no.
like, it's so fucking lame.
Oh,
and
boy.
It's just like, it's never like, if a trans person writes that and has, like, the agency to, like, and they're telling their story, great. But it's mm-hmm. never been trans writers writing that in the scripts that I've said no to. It's always been, like, a cis person being like, I'm gonna write a brave trans character who kind of, like, she's always talking about her cock and balls being itchy and it's unapologetic. And it's like I brought up the nuance of it. It's like, there are so few roles that, like, trans actors get seen for that I don't fault, like, transgender actors for taking those roles or auditioning for those roles. It's like, get paid, like, get a job, get your foot in the door, honestly. Like, and, like, the onus of responsibility is on these, like, people who are writing these shitty stories to, like, do more research and, like, not write stories that aren't really for them. It's like, if you want to tell a story about someone who has, like, a different lived experience, and you buy demographic, you need to, like, pay a consulting producer and mm-hmm. like, really, like, get authentic, you know, information from someone who has that lived experience and pay them for it, and, like, not just guess, not be like, oh yeah, she's like, there's a whole scene where her, like, her tuck comes undone on the bus and she's worried because people can start to see how huge her dick is. It's like, which actually, like, don't take that, because I'm actually gonna that was an amazing idea and I'm writing it into.
Oh, okay, because I had written it down and I was like, well, I'm talking to you, so obviously I can have it.
This is, I am getting paid almost $3.5 million to do this podcast, so
you are
technically,
I pay very well.
It's really, I mean, it's I'm not working after this. I'm just going straight to Mykonos and I'm gonna live off the rest of my life there.
Oh, say hi to Lindsay Lohan for me.
Yeah, I will. She's still DJing, still.
Ugh, she's just incredible to think about. Poised to become a very, very big star. And she said, no, thank you. I have other plans.
I mean, I think I just feel so much, I guess, empathy for Disney child actor kids who get eviscerated. Like, it's like, not only does the industry seem to eviscerate them, it's like, it is an absolute miracle if any one of those, like, child actors come out with, like, any, like, perspective, or mm-hmm. they come away feeling like their sanity is, like, intact in some regard, because it really feels like a lot of these child actors too have like crazy parents that like fuck them over too. So it's like the industry is evil, fucks them over, destroys and scrambles their brain, and then their parents are also like fucking like whacking off to how much money they're making off of like abusing their child mm-hmm. into this like psycho industry. And it's like, yeah, that person has no chance in hell of like not being crazy.
Yeah, if you don't have anyone advocating for you, it's very hard to succeed and like come out well adjusted. I don't want to say all parents are bad and wild, but like it takes a specific person to be like, I am dedicating my adult life to carting my kid around from audition to audition to sit on set, and then to say, yes, someone can scream fuck in my kid's face, that's okay. Or yeah. Yes, my kid can do this, where it's like, maybe I wouldn't allow my kid who wasn't an actor to do it. It's very, yeah. It's very curious.
I truly think that we've reached a point in technology where child acting should be illegal. Like, if they can take, if they can fucking take, like, Michael Douglas in, like, Ant-Man or whatever and put so much, like, computer animation on his face, mm-hmm. he looks like 25. And it's like, they can take a human body and shrink it down and then animate a kid's face onto an adult's face and just have them do the performance. Because, I've watched, like, so many movies in lockdown where there's like really young kid actors, and especially in like horror movies yes. and stuff, it's like at that age, I know you know that you're playing, but it's like I got traumatized by watching TV mm-hmm. when I was like a kid, and I'm like, I wonder if you're on set with like this giant fake monster that's like spewing blood and you're like a 4-year-old kid who's supposed to be like crying
uh-huh.
It's like that has to be like imprinting on you yeah. in some way, and I don't
feel
think
like it's more real than people realize.
Yeah, I mean, there has to be like a forum for child stars to talk about like their onset trauma or whatever. Did you see the Babadook?
I've never seen the Babadook, but I know that there's a person with a white face and a top hat. Maybe
mm-hmm. I think it's like an amazing movie. If you like Insidious, I think you should definitely watch The Babadook. It's like,
okay,
the child actor in it is, I think he was 6 when they shot the movie mm-hmm. and he is like so incredible in it. But I think it's the movie, he's like screaming and crying the whole time, and I'm like, there's no way a kid is like not feeling the, because they were like, he was an incredible improviser. And I was like, he's just actually crying, I think. I think he's, as his, like, he's getting, like, yanked around the room. It's like, I'm sure he's actually just crying.
Oh, boy.
So, again, an amazing film. I love to see a
just
gorgeous
amazing,
child improviser.
Stunning. Improvising, crying, and drama. That's so wild. Like, have you seen Hereditary?
Yeah.
That one was fucked up for me.
Yeah.
And that girl, I don't know how old she was when she shot it. Spoiler, if you haven't seen Hereditary, I'm gonna spoil it. But when they were like, all right, stick your head out the window. Like, this is what's gonna happen to it. I feel like as a child, I'd be like, wait, what? Yeah. I don't want that to happen.
I love the idea of them like in that shooting that movie and they actually like did it. They like were like, okay, we're gonna drive really fast and you're gonna stick your head out the window and then we're gonna donk it on a telephone pole.
Yeah. And you might be okay, you might not be, and we're gonna use the footage either way.
Yeah. The SAG rep is like, hey, just checking in, making sure you are comfortable with what's about to happen, you're about to get in the car. Hey, just checking in. I mean, immediately as we're talking about this, I'm like, I'm going to change my career path and I'm going to become like a child rep on like sets and like make sure kids aren't experiencing real trauma. I'm a trauma rep for children on SAG sets.
I mean, I don't think that's a bad idea. I do think for like harder shit that kids should be like in the budget, it should be like, here's a therapist that you can talk to.
Yeah.
And you can talk about if this experience was good or not. It doesn't go back to the studio. This is truly for you. I think that would be a dream for kids.
I think kids would really like that.
Hey, if you're a kid listening to Why Won't You Date Me, let me know. Let me know if that's something you like.
It's like the LA Cars for Kids commercial. It's like, but it's the I guess, not Cars for Kids. It's like 1-877.
Trauma helping for the kids. 877. Whenever I hear that commercial, I'm like, who are these kids and why do they need cars?
I know. We should not be putting kids in cars because you know what they're going to do. They're going to Fast and Furious race.
Mm-hmm. They're going to drive under trucks. They're going to drive off cliffs. They're going to jump out of the car. They're going to hang on to edges. It's going to be too much.
They're going to wear white tank tops and low-rise jeans.
Growing up, had a huge crush on Vin Diesel, and I would cut his bald head out of magazines, and I made a collage on my desk of him.
Wow. The desk collage. Was it just like a glue stick, or was it tape or
something?
It was
tape. My mother would have murdered me, murdered me if I had taped stuff to her brushed white wood furniture set she had gotten me.
That is so... so anchoring. The first sex dream I ever had was about Vin Diesel.
Really?
Yeah. I used to like talk about it I've talked about it on stage like two different times, and it always like the audience is like dead silent. I'm telling it because I think it's funny, but they're like so uncomfortable at the idea because I was like, I think it was like 7 or 8. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was like when Fast and Furious like had come out, because that was the first movie I saw with him in it. Mm-hmm. And it was like, so I was a child and I had this dream that I was having dinner with like my mom and my older sister. And then Vin Diesel like walked in my sister's house and he was like, I'm ready to pick you up. And my family was like, yay, have fun. And then we go into my mom's van in the driveway. And we both take off all our clothes. And I don't know what sex is at all. Like, mm-hmm. I have no perception of what sex is. So it was just, like, kissing and, like, kissing and, like, licking my face. He's, like, licking my face. Like, that was, like, what I thought was, like, sexy. Honestly, as, like, a 7-year-old was, like, just someone licking my forehead.
Now. I would let him do it.
I would let 100% let him lick my forehead.
There is a Vin Diesel short film. I cannot remember the name of it, but it is African American, I think is what it's called. African American. It is, I still believe, still on YouTube. It is a short film that he made about not being black enough. And he does this monologue in it. And if memory serves me correct, because I saw it like years and years ago with my friend Tessie, because Vin, I think, is her like celebrity past with her husband. But I remember it being not good, but also incredibly good. So I think you should watch it.
Wow. And wait, so what's the criteria for that specific judgment?
I don't know. So, okay, it's like a pretty decent story. He like goes into an audition and, I can't remember the beginning of it. I need to rewatch it. But I think the criteria is the words aren't great. The performance is pretty good, but that together... elevating the material, I think, makes it bad and good at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, that truly is like, I'm pointing at you. I don't know why I'm pointing at you. Like, that truly is. I think about like movies like these big franchises that have some of the worst dialogue of all time in them. And like Pretty Little Liars or like, you know, these shows, these teen shows, Fast and Furious. These actors have to say some of like the dumbest shit I've ever heard. And it only hit me in like the last few years where I was like, that is kind of a feat.
Huge talent.
Deliver those lines and like make it believable when it's like literally like a 31-year-old woman being like, mom is not going to like that I wasn't waiting outside for her after volleyball practice. It's like, wow. It's like, if you can sell that, like, you're an amazing actor. Great job.
There is moments of magic, Mike, where I think Channing Tatum is a great actor. He's a good actor. He works a lot. But there's a couple of chunks of dialogue where I'm like, that was the best take. This can't be. I haven't seen it.
I get that from him.
Magic Mike is a very fun ride. It has like an indie feel, but like there's a very big budget. And what is his name? All right. What is his name?
Matthew McConaughey.
Matthew McConaughey is very good in it. I thoroughly liked it. Magic Mike 2 was an unnecessary movie. I was deeply disappointed because it didn't feel like the heart was there like in the first one. I felt like it was Channing's passion project. Also, I don't know any of these things. I'm really philosophizing how I felt about Magic Mike.
I mean, it all of that, as someone who has not seen any of it, that sounds like it's true.
Ooh, I have a question. To go back to dating real quick, are there trans dating sites or no?
I think there are. I don't use them. I haven't. So I started estrogen taking like hormone replacement a couple of weeks ago, and it has really like made me a lot less horny. Like I was frustratingly horny like all through lockdown, like super depressed and like very just kind of like angry and sad. So it was like being horny all the time, I think, exacerbated those feelings because it reminded me that I didn't have anybody to like raw dog with me. And so since I've like started hormone replacement, I'm like a lot mellower and I haven't been really using the apps. So because I'm like just not thinking about it as much. I still feel like lonely and stuff, but I'm also just like, I am so kind of like, and this is not like a dick thing, innuendo, I'm at half mass emotionally and energy wise. So I just don't feel like I have the ability right now to offer someone kind of like the fun flirty side of me that I would if I was like first starting to try and like date other people. And like right now I'm like I don't think I can be like chipper and exciting to like meet a new person. So I'm kind of finding peace in not exploring more dating apps, at least for right now. I definitely like, you know, I'm tired of, I was going on a lot of dates pre-lockdown, and I've been on like a couple of social distance dates in lockdown.
How were they?
I've done like a couple of Zoom dates, and then I went on a couple of walks, and it's just like feels weird because it's like, I haven't eaten out yet. I haven't like eaten on a patio of a restaurant yet. I don't feel comfortable enough to do that at right now. I like order a lot of food, but it was weird and it wasn't like ideal. It feels like, especially if you're walking, you're not really facing each other.
Yeah.
And like in my neighborhood, there's not really like, there's a park, but there's not like a ton of places to sit. And it's also like, it's like we're in the middle of a heat wave and it's like the fires, so the smoke in LA is so fucked up. It's like a really bad time to be outside and inside. So just like not ideal. And I'm just like I don't think having a mask on is hard too because you're like trying to emote and be flirty. And it's like you have to be like, I'm smiling under this mask, big horny boy. I'm licking my lips under this mask, big sexy mister. It's like a nightmare.
Yeah, it sounds bad, but I think I want to do an in-person date soonish. I think that's what I'm like gearing up to because I'm so horny, although I did open this episode by saying I fell asleep with a vibrator on me. I think I'm just like hungry for human touch.
It really, like, I've been really forward and like open about being like, would love a situation where I could find someone who like I know is being safe, who's like, you know, getting tested when they need to and isn't seeing a bunch of other people and that I can trust, and then we can raw dog. I'm joking. You know, use
rejection. No, you mean raw
use
dog.
Use rejection.
Raw dogs.
Raw dogs. Raw hot dogs. Just eating a ton of raw hot dogs together.
Just slap me in the face with a raw hot dog.
I've always been like, you have to get tested before we hang out because it's like meeting new people is hard because it's like people lie. People will lie on apps to like fuck. and that sucks. And you never even, there's people that are like good liars and like sociopaths. So it's like, I've just been like pretty thorough about it. And I have like, I think it's possible to communicate, like, I would love to like be able to hook up with someone, like not just like, you know, go on like a date and never touch someone again. Because I've had a couple of people like that, or like earlier in lockdown that I was like talking to that from like Hinge or whatever on dating apps. And it was just like very quick to like fizzle out because you're not, it's like, I don't want to do like sexting really. I'm not super into that.
Yeah. Sexting, I think is depressing.
Yeah. Like sexting and video stuff. And then just like knowing people who have gotten like their photos and stuff like put online. Yeah. And I'm like, it's not worth the risk to me.
Also, I don't like getting dressed up to go to my living room. I don't want to get dressed up to video chat someone. I want to get dressed up, get in my car, and go somewhere.
If you're going to get dressed up, it's to have, like, some guy tear it off with his boner, right?
That's all I want. Someone's boner to rip my shirt off and rip someone's my pants down.
They've got, like, a box cutter for a boner, and it's, like, slicing your clothes off.
Will that hurt me? Well, Patty, we've come to the end, and I asked this question. I just interviewed Mitra before you, and I forgot to ask her this, so I'm going to make her answer it in a voice note. But I usually ask people this. Would you date me?
I'm not gay, but I would date you if I was into women.
Hey, I'll take it.
Yes,
that's where I'm at right now. I'll take it. Do you have anything you want to promote?
I want to promote the healthy and respectful treatment of child actors on the sets of film and television productions.
Honestly, I really like that. I think that's a great thing to promote. I think that's wonderful. Well, if you like this episode of Oh, Why Won't You Date Me, you can like it, you can subscribe, you can give me 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. I've been saying iTunes for the last 2 years, and it was just brought to my attention that it's Apple Podcasts. And
everyone thinks it's iTunes. It doesn't matter if Apple Podcasts is correct. Everyone thinks it's iTunes. Don't let people shame you into a corner.
Patty, thank you. Yeah, leave me a review on iTunes. And if you DM me, send me something nasty, I will read it. So this person said, Nicole, love the podcast. Here's a nasty for you. I want to empty a can of whipped cream into your puss and put a cherry on top before I eat you out like a chocolate cream puff. Oh, thank you so much. You hated it.
What?
What?
Oh my god!
My favorite part about reading these is watching my guest's face change. You got so upset about
Okay, bye-bye.
This has been a Team Coco production.
For years, I just dreaded going to the dentist. But at Advanced Dentistry, I don't have to.
First and foremost, they want you to feel comfortable when you walk in. Like, you'll feel it. Whereas in the past, I might have gone into the dentist and thinking, I might feel some pain at some point. But with IV sedation, it can be something that you don't dread.
If you've been avoiding the dentist because of fear, worry, or just not wanting to be judged, you're not alone. Visit NoFearDentist.com to learn how IV sedation can change your life.
Ready for an amazing deal? BreezeLine's fiber-powered internet starting at $19.99 per month offers the reliability you deserve and security you can trust. Whether you're streaming, gaming, or working from home, we've got all your needs covered with speeds up to 1 gig and our 2-year price lock guarantee. This deal gets even better with 2 free months of internet, free equipment, and free Wi-Fi your way to protect against cyber threats. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires July 8th, 2024. Learn more at BreezeLine.com.